This is Junk Food Cinema.
I am so fucking excited
to do this all mode.
It's been a long time. Well, I mean, we've been trying to cover this movie for a couple of years now, but you can't find it on DVD anywhere. Yeah. You can't find it streaming anywhere.
Was it ever released on DVD?
I think it was.
Because of music. Here's what I think.
It was
happened.
At least on VHS.
I think it's like the Miami Vice situation. By the way, Jason Murphy's here with us again.
Hey, how's it going?
For this special extra bonus episode where we're going to review a movie we've wanted to talk about for a long time, as we're doing as a special Alamo. My theory on this is that it's much like the Miami Vice issue, where because there's so much modern top 40 music on the soundtrack. I mean, you got songs from Oingo Boingo. You got songs from fucking, you know, the Butthole Surfers. You
have that crisscross track.
Crisscross track. Like, in spanning eras, I think that's why they weren't able to release this on a good DVD or Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just weren't able to secure all of those rights.
Right.
Yeah, but we're talking about 1994's Shazam, starring Sinbad.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, I feel like when you talk about movies that are genie-based, people in the 90s, people think of two movies. They think of Aladdin, and unfortunately, they think
Wishmaster.
Of Shazam. Three movies in the 90s
okay,
that are
sorry.
Genie-based.
Sorry.
No, I forgot about Wishmaster.
All of a sudden,
as
I feel like I'm in a Monty Python.
Did.
Aladdin, Kazam, and Wishmaster.
And Wishmaster. Okay,
yeah. No, that
and a ruthless and fanatical efficiency of the Pope.
Yeah, when you said genie-based, I was like, oh, Wishmaster.
Yeah, no. I mean, technically, he's a
but a lot of people
Jason,
think of
whatever.
The Shazam knockoff Kazam.
Yeah.
The starring Shaquille O'Neal.
Which was such a blatant ripoff of what this movie is. And I feel bad because I feel like most people know Sinbad from the terrible comedies like Jingle All the Way, First Kid. I mean, movies where he really did not get to flex both his comedic and dramatic muscles like he does in Shazam. And I also
and House
think,
Guest.
And
which,
House Guest, yes.
Which in which he co-stars with his co-star here, Phil Hartman,
right.
Who also directed this movie.
Which is one of the few movies he actually
Wait,
did
Hartman
direct.
Hartman directed?
Yes,
directed
Phil Hartman yeah. directed Shazam.
Really?
Yes. That's one of the things.
Shit, I didn't know that.
There are people who believe that part of the reason it's hard to find is because he was unhappy with it. It wasn't up to snuff for him, despite the fact that it was a modest commercial success, that he was embarrassed by the movie and that he, as the holder of the rights, refused to allow this movie to come out in other formats.
I know a lot of people watch it disappointed that it's not a Captain Marvel
Right,
movie,
that's
right?
The other huge problem is that people assume this is a comic book movie.
Well, this came out at about the same time as a Carpenter's film, In the Mouth of Madness, where
yeah.
we all went and saw it thinking, oh my God, this is At the Mountains of Madness.
Right.
And it's not, but it's still Lovecraft-based. And so people are like, oh, holy shit, this is a Captain Marvel movie, and it's not a Captain Marvel movie.
Right. One of the things that I thought was really interesting in this is that it's actually surprisingly dark. You know,
it's
I mean,
so dark.
Ostensibly, it's a kid's film.
I
right?
mean, okay, plot-wise, it's almost exactly the same as the Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause, but it's the dark version of the Santa Claus through the Escape Clause.
I haven't seen Santa Claus.
I have not seen.
It's the same idea where you have a council of mystical figures. You have a council of imaginary sort of friends that all kid, like the Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, and of course, the wish-granting genie. And in this case, okay. played by Sinbad, Sinbad is the genie on that council who all he wants in the whole world is to be the genie to a little kid and grant wishes to improve his life. But unfortunately, he gets the lamp gets misplaced, gets misfiled, and ends up going to a major corporation headed by the immortal John Lithgow, who playing such a fucking amazing asshole in this movie
to a T.
But when that actually, you know, accidentally ends up with a kid, the thing that this is what flummoxes me. I can't believe, like, you know, it's a very simple.
He just used flummox.
He did, by the way.
It's a very simple premise. You know, the kid gets a hold of the lamp. You've got the, you know, you've got the evil corporation, John Lithgow, coming to try to get the lamp. But all he wants the genie to do is find a new wife for his dad. And because his dad is divorced and his dad is very sad. But when you meet the mom and you realize that she's an alcoholic And the fact that there's like subtle jokes about it.
They played like coy with it, right?
They do. Because the dad, because it's a kid's movie.
Well, because the dad kept telling the little boy that his mom was dead.
Right.
And then you find out that she's not dead, but she might as well have been dead.
But yeah, yeah.
Well, and then you get these, like, there's a few oddball jokes that make you think that she was smacking him around when she was drunk.
Yeah.
And it's just a little, it's like, it's so weird for
They keep saying, don't shake the lamp, don't shake the lamp. And then you realize that it's a fucking alligator, don't shake the baby, which is what she did, which was the final straw for the dad to be like, get out of our lives. And that's so, what the fucking left field? It's like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was watching something that is this heavy. Gravity didn't have this much weight to it.
One of the things that I really like about it, and you know, child of the 70s, right? I mean, I was, well, born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s. Sherman Helmsley's last film.
It is actually Sherman Helmsley's last film.
Yeah, because I mean, I watched a lot of, Moving On Up, The Jeffersons, etc.
I
And amen.
He's actually my favorite character in the movie. I love the fact that he's playing Sinbad's genie dad. He's like very disapproving about how he grants his wishes, but it's he's almost got a little red fox to him in like what he's doing. Like it's almost like Sherman Helmsley doing Sanford and Son, which is kind of great.
I mean, it was clear that like Sherman Helmsley was like, okay, my career is like relegated to cameo appearances and stuff like that. So I'm going to try to do something offensive or edgy or whatever. And so he was like, okay, well, what's edgy to me? Well, I'm going to think about Red Fox, which was, you know, what, late 70s or whatever. And so he starts like kind of channeling that, which honestly, even in 2017, Red Fox is like super offensive. Like his early stuff, you know.
So, he's still fucking funny.
He's like that track two on Eddie Murphy's Raw where you're like, I can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
And speaking of having an edge, when you find out the mom is played by Rosie O'Donnell in the same year that the fucking Flintstones movie came out.
Oh, yeah.
And this was before, I mean, this is when she was still like the Queen of Nice before she became edgy. And it's like, this is long before Riding the Bus with My Sister, where it's like, oh, that's just ill-advised. Like, this is a completely different type of character to make us uncomfortable. Yeah.
Where she played the mentally handicapped girl on the bus.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, she didn't play the bus. She was the riding the bus with my sister, Murphy. Come on. That's offensive.
That's a Donald Trump joke. I'm sorry. You're one demerit.
I cannot believe.
Yeah.
10 points from Hufflepuff.
You would be a fucking Hufflepuff.
What, me? What? Yeah, you would. What?
No, you're a Slytherin.
No,
you are a Slytherin.
No, I did the sorting hat. I did the sorting hat. It was Ravenclaw.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the Hufflepuff.
Really?
Oh, I'm Hufflepuff all the way.
No. You say that with pride.
No, did you do that? Did you do the sorting hat?
I did. I'm a Gryffindor.
Really?
No, I haven't done the actual sorting hat. I did the online sorting hat, which put me in Hufflepuff, and you're goddamn right, I'm a Hufflepuff.
My wife was like, no, my husband's a Slytherin. No question about it. And she was really upset because I was a Ravenclaw, and
of course you're a Ravenclaw.
She was a Hufflepuff, which is weird because, no, my wife is a Ravenclaw or Slytherin, but I'm pretty sure she was.
This is whatever. The 13th nerdiest conversation we've ever had.
So, what house would Sinbad be?
That's a good question because we haven't actually talked about Sinbad in this movie. Is really he's channeling something that he's less like the Kazam. He's less like Shaq trying to mouth fart his way through the English language, and more like because that's what Shaq does. It's like the missing the free throws is him doing verbs. Like he can't even fucking make the free throws of getting verbs correct. But Sinbad is pulling from something more like Rod Sterling of a be careful what you wish for type of like
it's Sterling, by the way.
Did I say Sterling?
You did.
It's because I've been watching Mad Men.
Roger Sterling.
Yeah, that's my bad. That's my and you know what? Mike Pence, speaking of politics, is like the douchey Roger Sterling.
Yeah. Wait. There's the douchey Roger Sterling.
Roger Sterling. No, the one you don't like.
Rod Serling, creepy, genius.
But be careful what you wish for.
No upper lip.
But this is not one of Sinbad's best performances, though. He's really uneven.
Sometimes he's funny, and
sometimes the humor doesn't land.
I think he was feeling like
he shouldn't have tried the accent. That's what I'm saying. He shouldn't have tried a British accent.
No. And, well, he's pulling from a tradition of like grand sort of stage presence of, you know, a theatrical type of performance.
He's trying cocaine is what he's
trying. Well, yeah, there's a lot of cocaine on this set. This is like, even Joel Silver would be like, no, I'm sorry, guys, I'm getting clean. It's really not my scene anymore. It's 1994. I really think that I need to take a step back and evaluate my life. This is how I sound when I'm not on cocaine.
But
I'm Joel Silver.
By the way, we forgot to mention this because the way we saw this, because we could not find a copy, is it was my birthday movie last year.
It was.
It was an AFGA print.
How did they have a 35mm print in the
American? They have a 35mm print of Skate Town USA. Yeah. Of course they have Shazam. Yeah.
Which is ironic considering the dad in this movie is played by Patrick Swayze. So there is that obvious connection between the two movies. So you have shown more Patrick Swayze movies on your birthday than any human being.
Yeah, that's weird, dude. We need to talk about
that. Yeah,
we
got it.
Wait, do I really have to need to explain my love of Patrick Swayze to you guys?
All I'm saying is
it's weird.
You might be Swayze crazy. That's all I'm saying. That's just the thought I'm putting out there. I'm no accusations, no judgments. You might be Swayze crazy. He doesn't take his belt off in this movie. That's the mom's job. Am I right?
Ew.
Because she's abusive.
Oh my God. Okay.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. Did I go heavy? We're talking about fucking Shazam.
We're talking about Shazam. Shazam gets a little weird at times.
What's your favorite scene in this movie?
I mean, the one that really gets me every time is the scene in which the little boy makes his first wish, and you know, all he wants in the whole world is a best friend, and then like literally Shazam makes it rain dogs and cats.
Oh my God, the scene is so fucking stupid. Are you serious?
Well, because it's like, oh, he wants a dog and it, like all the pets rain down, but then of course it takes that dark turn where like then they start getting like, they start splatting on the sidewalk, they start getting stuck in the gutters. Like,
yeah,
it's fucking Hinnenlotter by the time it's done.
That wasn't even... Okay, so you're doing the special features version.
I did watch the extended edition. I don't know if you guys watched that version or not.
No one has seen that. It's like on YouTube or some shit.
I have to know. It's the same thing as the girl who might have died from New Blood.
All right,
these are things I have to know,
fine.
So I have to see every possible version.
Mine is when they're... I know it's ridiculous, but they're at Spencer Gifts.
Yeah,
and,
which is a weird... Weird fucking promotion. I know.
And they and he God, what is he like? He turns the manager into a pile of cats.
Yeah, no, it, a pile of cats with a little hat that has boobs on it because it's Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah, right.
Oh, dude, I mean, we mentioned it earlier, but the best scene in the fucking movie is the Council of Imaginary Figures. Dude, Bill Murray as the Easter Bunny is so fucking funny.
Oh,
but Ellen DeGeneres as the Tooth Fairy, just those two going back and forth over the table, how much they hate each other, is it's just, you know, and the moment where Ellen DeGeneres is just like, one of these days I'm going to get those two teeth. And the look on Bill Murray's face, it's so fucking funny. The physical comedy they have in those
really
scenes.
Good.
But the main scene with them is just really, and then of course, you know, fucking Carl Reiner as fucking Santa Claus. Perfect. And just like this, just this dopey.
So much better than
fucking
Santa Claus the movie.
His
5 minutes in this film is so much better than Santa Claus the
it's
movie.
So,
go
it's
fuck
so
yourself,
good.
Jeanette Schwark.
Every reason to track down and see Shazam is because of the Council of Imaginary Figures.
But no, like Tim the Toolman Taylor, what's his name?
Tim Allen.
Was actually in the movie. As the guy as the guy that ran the car dealership.
That's fucking right.
Right?
Wow, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, but
it goes Zemeckis for 5 minutes and it's like, what are we doing in used cars? Why is this movie happening?
I know.
Within You Got Chocolate on My Peanut Butter.
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah. It was really weird, but it was like, oh, and wait, but no, he's Santa. He's Santa, but yeah, whatever.
Santa's in the movie, not playing Santa. But the tremendous amount of cocaine that we've already talked about being a part of this movie,
yes.
Of course Tim Allen showed up.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but so, of course, you know, what we didn't mention is, I mean, we mentioned how good John Lithgow is, but Phil Hartman...
I'm amazing in this movie!
...as his assistant that's constantly trying to get, you know, steal the lamp back haphazardly. He is actually much funnier than Sinbad is in this movie.
Did you guys see?
Yeah, but that's because I feel like I'm sorry to keep arguing with you on this point, but I feel like it's because Sinbad isn't going for the broad stroke comedy like he does in every other movie. There is an attempt at heart in this film by Sinbad that is unequaled by any other performance in his entire canon. I just said Sinbad's canon.
I think he felt like this was like his last.
You want to check out Sinbad's canon?
Hey, we should totally sit down and watch Sinbad's entire canon.
I think he felt like this was like his last effort, like his last stand at an actual career, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, this precedes, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Cargill, this precedes Robin Williams making that turn and being like, I'm going to be a dramatic actor. So this is actually very groundbreaking. He's a former stand-up comic turned comedic actor who suddenly...
This follows because Robin Williams was doing that in the 80s.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah, Awakenings and Dead Poets Society and Fisher King. Yeah, no, he was The Best of Times...
Yes, that's right. With Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah.
Did you guys see the Andy Dick outtakes?
I've not seen the Andy Dick outtakes.
I assume all of anything that's left in of Andy Dick is just outtakes.
This is still really early in his career. Like, at this point, he was still doing, he had not yet done...
Was it before News Radio?
No, it was not only before News Radio, it was before, what was the show called? The Ben Stiller Show.
Oh, yeah.
This was before Ben Stiller Show.
Speaking of the Ben Stiller Show, what the fuck with third act Nazi gold in this movie? Why in the hell?
If you've got an evil corporation tracking shit down, why can't it be Nazi gold?
I get that, but I don't need the Easter Bunny and Hitler in the same movie together.
Ben Stiller as Hitler's pretty funny.
I mean, yes.
I mean, this is the second time. It's the first of two times Ben Stiller played Hitler.
And I feel like that's where
the other time being Highway to Hell.
Well, he didn't go obvious with it, right?
Yeah.
He just made it kind of goofy.
And what's crazy is on the Ben Stiller Show, it was Gilbert Gottfried who played Hitler, not Ben Stiller.
No,
but he did go and play Hitler in another movie, an indie film called, I think it's called Highway to Hell, which is a 90s road movie going into hell, and he plays Hitler in hell.
I think that's one of those that I saw on the shelf and I never actually watched it.
Oh, I watched it.
Because I was afraid.
I was like, what the fuck is Ben Stiller doing here?
So, did you guys know that this is something interesting? Ben Gazzara, who plays just kind of the broad stroke guardian angel on the council, which is funny because it's like the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy,
Santa Claus,
guardian angel, like a random guardian angel, was supposed to be played by Kurt Russell, but he actually he backed out at the last minute.
I confuse Ben Gazzara with Ben Kingsley all the time.
Sir Ben Gazzara plays a guardian angel, but not the guardian angel in this movie. And yeah, I love the whole Zamboni chase toward the third act, where you've got John Lithgow on one Zamboni and Sinbad as the genie.
Come on, man!
Horrible. That's so cute.
How do you not like a Zamboni chase?
Little moment.
No, it was just ridiculous. I mean, it was they couldn't decide what they wanted to be. It was silly at points, and then. It was surprisingly dark, but they played it as silly, but it was so dark that they couldn't really sell it.
I don't understand why this movie's so forgotten, though.
Well,
of all this stuff we've talked about, I mean, it really is a movie that deserves to be at least remembered.
If nothing else, fucking Roger Deakins shot the movie. Like, this movie looks amazing.
He leaves that off of his CV.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not.
I checked IMDb. It's not on IMDb.
It's uncredited, for sure. But, I mean, that's why that Zamboni chase looks so goddamn good.
All right, now that you say that, there are a couple of shots. Maybe. I gotta go. I would say I have to go back and rewatch it, but
you can't.
I am never rewatching that. Even if I had the opportunity, I would not rewatch that movie.
I like kids films that aren't afraid to delve into the heavier shit. It's very reminiscent of a Don Bluth animated film.
Okay.
It's like we make room for the morose so that kids realize that it's not all fucking sunshine and rainbows. And you know what?
Okay.
Kazam with Shaq is totally afraid to go dark, except for the fact that they do, if you watch that movie, they do kill that kid. That kid falls down an elevator shaft, and at the beginning of the movie, falls down through five different stories of an abandoned building. So he technically dies twice,
Jesus.
But they gloss over it, and it's all just like
play. I never actually saw Kazam.
Because you were too busy watching Shazam with Sinbad, right, because you're right. A regular human being like the rest of us who watch fucking Shazam.
And who know how to spell Berenstain correctly.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I do like that there is a shout-out to Nelson Mandela at the end of this movie. It says, for Nelson, which is odd, but that's the credit.
Well, I mean, sadly had died, you know, it was, you know, years before.
I didn't expect apartheid to play as much of a... But I guess if you're going to have Nazi gold...
And if you're going to have Nazi gold and a black genie...
I support Sun City! Of course you do, John.
The movie was all over the place.
It's a little bit of a mess.
That's the beauty of it, though.
And I think it is intentional because when we have not even touched upon the fact, and I'm so disappointed in us, that a fucking JFC legend like John Sayles wrote this goddamn screenplay, and we're not even mentioning it until the end of the show.
Oh, yeah, but he wrote it, but he was unhappy with it, and it ended up changing.
He was
his
unhappy
name.
With Darabont's rewrites. He wasn't unhappy with the script in total. He was unhappy with Darabont's rewrites, and that's why
he used a different name on it.
Well, that's why him and Bob Shea fucking butted heads so much on this movie is because Shea at New Line let Frank Darabont rewrite so much of John Sayles' script.
No kidding.
Yeah. Just like without even consulting Sayles because Bob Shea could be kind of a son of a bitch, you know?
Okay.
So I can understand why Sayles is so upset.
I mean, you know, watching Piranha and then...
Don't go there.
No. And watching Piranha and then watching Shazam, you can see that the same diseased mind was behind the writing.
You could tell that he's not been on Junk Food Cinema before because for him, he went to Piranha instead of Battle Beyond the Stars, which is always our go-to for anything.
Yes.
Yeah. Sayles, Horner, are Cameron related.
Which I wish Horner had done the score. Unfortunately, it is Danny Elfman.
It's
passable.
That's a very formative memory for me, watching Piranha and then...
Hold on.
What the fuck is happening?
Here's the thing, though, and this is what gets me about you in the disconnect. You sneer about Danny Elfman, but the reason you sneer about Danny Elfman reason we got new Oingo Boingo.
That's like, true, about Danny Elfman?
I don't know why I do that. All these the little voices.
But he got Oingo Boingo back together, and this was the first new song that they had done in years.
On the soundtrack, you're right.
And they did it as the Knights of Oingo Boingo, which is the original name of their band in the 70s.
The Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo.
The Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, you got schooled by the guest, Cargill. Take a drink.
He knew. He knew.
School go boogle.
There was no being schooled. You were the one who was schooled.
Yeah, because you forgot that Oingo Boingo was on the soundtrack to a movie that Danny Elfman did, and that's why we got it.
No, it's true.
Even led off the entire podcast with, it has Oingo Boingo on the soundtrack. That's why you got Oingo Boingo.
All right. You know what? Here's a junk food little pop quiz for you. Let's see if you can pass this quiz. It's a dead man's party. Leave your body at the door. What 80s movie was that in?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Guess what?
Wait, hold on.
I'm Jason Murphy. I'm the new host of Junk Food Cinema.
Be careful what you wish for. Sinbad, save me. I wish I had the answer to that. Fuck you, Sinbad, for not showing up.
Back to School, starring Rodney Dangerfield.
Triple-ended!
Yes, you did get triple-ended in Back to School at one of the parties. He actually had fucking Oingo Boingo there. Doing It's a Dead Man's Party.
By the way, Back to School, written by Chuck Russell, who would write and direct Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and write Dreamscape, both movies that are junk food cinema worthy for.
And other notable 80s movies with Oingo Boingo in the soundtrack.
Weird Science.
And Ghostbusters.
Man.
So your Hail Mary at the beginning, actually.
Wait,
What song in Ghostbusters did they do? I know Weird Science, but...
Flesh and Blood?
Okay. Yeah. No, and they did the title track.
Oh, God, we're suddenly realizing how well we know the Ghostbusters and Ghoster 2 soundtrack.
Yeah, also, but no, they did the title track to Weird Science. Yeah. You know?
Crazy segue, Flesh and Blood is also the name of the bar where during that third act slump where he's questioning his Joseph Conrad moment as the creator of Community, whose name I'm blanking, Dan Harmon calls it. the Joseph Conrad moment, when Sinbad has that, who am I, why am I even here? He goes to a bar called Flesh and Blood, where Neil Flynn is the bartender. I love Neil Flynn. The janitor on Scrubs, he's been in Fugitive.
Oh, you know, wow, that was him?
Yeah, he's in. He turns up in so many fucking movies. In fact, this era is also when he's like the first baseman for the Cubs and Rookie of the Year. So, yeah, I remember shit. Don't worry about it. But seriously, guys, if you haven't seen Shazam, if you've put it off because it's hard to find, if you put it off because you prefer Kazam, what the fuck is wrong with you, you heathen? You probably pronounce it GIF when it's a GIF. That being said, you should still redeem yourself by seeing Shazam as soon as possible. I think it's available on Crackle, I want to say, is the only
I don't know. I haven't been able to find it online. Like, I keep checking Just Watch, and nobody has it.
I can't even find it on YouTube, and I check, like, maybe once every 2 months.
So that VHS that we've been passing around is really the only way we've seen it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the 35 print at my birthday
party. Can you turn your nose up any higher? You might get a sinus infection.
Fuck off. Only one of us had a birthday party that showed Shazam, and it's this motherfucker right here.
True story. True story. Right, so
fair enough.